So thank you all for inviting me to speak. Today I'll be talking about the use of at-home self-collected samples for HPV testing in underscreened Latina women. This is called the Mi Cuerpo, Mi Prueba program or project, and is part of a larger set of research projects looking at self-collection for HPV testing run by Dr. Jennifer Smith at UNC Chapel Hill. My disclosures are that Hologic and Rovers Medical Devices donated some materials and testing for the study, and Hologic has paid for part of my conference travel expenses. So quick significance, as you probably know, cervical cancer screening is highly effective at reducing incidence and morbidity from cervical cancer, but of course women have to be screened to benefit from that, and about a quarter of Latina women in the U.S. report not having gotten a pap smear in the previous 3 years, which is the maximum recommended interval for pap alone. Latinas have a significantly higher incidence and mortality from cervical cancer compared to non-Latinas in the U.S. So quite a few groups in the U.S. and internationally have looked at HPV self-collection, self-collection for HPV testing as a way to reduce some barriers to screening with diverse populations. And so we're particularly here looking at the Latina population. This data that I'm presenting is actually part of a broader study that worked with English speakers and Spanish speakers, all low-income women overdue for screening in North Carolina. The primary goal of the study was to validate home self-collected samples against self-collected samples in the clinic and clinician samples, testing all samples for HPV and then running cytology or PAP on those clinician samples. We referred all women to follow-up screening and treatment as needed, and then we conducted a follow-up questionnaire to assess acceptability. And so we present our validation data elsewhere, so today I'm really focused on the recruitment and some brief data on acceptability. Women had to be underscreened, 30 to 64, because HPV testing is only recommended for women over 30. Low income, uninsured, underinsured, or on Medicaid, and for this particular component, self-identified Latina. So some general recruitment strategies when you're working with a medically underserved population is kind of by definition they're not accessing services, so it's going to be very hard to reach them, even working with partners with reach into the community. And a lot of programs actually for low-income populations work with women with young children, who have generally been screened recently because they get screened during prenatal care or shortly after birth. So with the English-speaking population, we relied heavily on media-based, and this is really small media, not mass media, so providing flyers, posters, postcards through community partners, but primarily women picked up a postcard and called us. That was most of our recruitment came from that approach. So in our first year of recruitment, we reached 166 non-Latinas, yay. We got 3 Latinas, even though we had all our materials in Spanish and we distributed them through, you know, cultural centers. It just clearly wasn't working. So we were lucky enough to get supplemental funding from the Leinberger Cancer Center at UNC to hire an outreach coordinator to focus on Latina recruitment. So probably comes as no surprise to anyone, what really worked was these direct contact, building personal relationships. Our outreach coordinator, Lania, conducted a lot of, you know, visited a lot of pulgas, the flea markets, laundromats, parent nights, Latino festivals, support groups, and she ended up recruiting 63% of our participants directly and 40% at the pulga, so it's a very good, productive place to recruit. A lot of women who participated in the study or who wanted to but weren't eligible recommended, hey, get in touch with my mom, get in touch with my sister, and we got quite a few women that way. And then we still worked through community partners, but this was more of a them recommending verbally the study to women, promotoras, and we got another 10% that way. So Lania gave me the rundown of basically how she did this. So to kind of get the math, to really screen women, primarily the hardest thing to find is a woman who's overdue for screening. Even though about a quarter of Latina women are overdue, about 95% of the women that Lania talked to weren't overdue. So it was basically just quickly saying, like, hi, I work in cervical cancer prevention. Can I ask if you've had a recent PAP? And she said pretty much everyone will answer. If they had not had a recent PAP, she asked, you know, we have a program, are you interested in it? That's to help women get cervical cancer screening. Are you interested? She would explain to them that PAPs are looking for abnormal cells, but HPV, and there's a new way of HPV testing that looks for the virus that can cause those changes in the cells, establishing that this is something that's already done by doctors, and now we're really interested in seeing, can this be done by women at home? And that emphasis on this is, we want to see how people like it, not really, because it's not really a clinical study, we're not testing safety or anything like that, and so trying not to kind of scare people. And then that this can help, might help women in the future get cervical cancer screening. We found that you didn't really need to have a prior existing relationship, that she was able to build that trust with frequent personal connection. And she's actually not Latina, but she has excellent Spanish. She was still able to engage people well. People seemed comfortable working with her. So we got 70 women who were eligible and received a self-collection kit, and of those, 76% returned their sample, and this is roughly equivalent to what we found with our English speakers as well. And you can see pretty much all of those also went to the clinic appointment. So to complete the study, they had to do a home self-collection and go to a clinic appointment. So yeah, 98% of those actually did follow up. There were kind of to be expected challenges with retaining the women between recruitment and attending the appointment. Phones often, people don't have minutes on them, they get disconnected. A lot of people have inflexible work schedules. You can't just take an hour or two off to go to a PAP. You might have to take a whole day off, and you're not going to get paid for that. And some women did experience issues with transportation. To address this, Lanya would basically text them immediately after she recruited them, like next day, hey, just checking in, do you have any questions? About weekly, really checking in with them until we got the kit back, and then to schedule them an appointment, checking in the day before, have you been able to find transportation? Do you think you're going to, just really trying to problem solve as much as possible. And I say navigation sometimes literally, because there would be times she's at the clinic on the phone being like, okay, where are you? Okay, turn right. Okay, get off at this stop. So yeah, just a lot of personal interaction. Our final sample, median age of 40, very low income, fairly low educational levels, all uninsured. The median years since last PAP was 5 years. Our minimum criteria was 4 years or more. We had a few women who had never been screened, quite a few that had been 10, 15, 20 years since they've been screened. And none of our final sample, participants in our final sample, were born in the United States, though you can see that some had been there for quite some time, or here, rather, for quite some time. Like I said, our validation data are mostly presenting elsewhere, but if you're curious, we had about 14% positive by home self-collection and 8 positive by clinician sample. We have some theories as to why that is, though we're not 100% sure, and if you're interested, I can share those theories later. What's interesting to us here is that we had a 4% incidence of high-grade lesions requiring treatment. This is really very high. The average rate in the U.S. is less than 1% among the general population, so definitely reaching a high-risk group of women. Both of these cases did test HPV-positive by the home sample and the clinic sample, so that's what's really important to us, is are they going to be detected on a home test? And they are. Obviously, this is a tiny sample. There are much larger validation studies out there. But connecting these women to care was a very, again, kind of time-intensive process, since they weren't citizens, they're not eligible for any government programs to help them get that treatment. So it was really a matter of connecting them to charity care programs or something called Project Access, which is a network of private providers that offer to provide those services. So we were able to get both of them treatment at UNC hospitals, but it's really not an insignificant challenge to make sure that people who screen abnormal can get that care they need. Brief attitudes, 100% of the women were willing to use it again, also willing to get a PAP again. They found the self-instructions not difficult to understand. The majority felt positively towards the self-test, but there was a good chunk of them that didn't feel so positively towards the self-test, and so that's something we really do want to look into, is, you know, how can we help increase comfort and increase satisfaction with the self-test. You can see, though, also some people felt not particularly positively towards PAP, and I think we can all imagine those reasons. And so when we looked at reporting concern about the self-test and about PAPs, some of the most common concern reported about the PAP test was that they would do it incorrectly. They were just worried they'd drop the brush, or that they wouldn't get the right sample, or that they'd spill the collection media. And a few women were nervous about inserting it because this wasn't familiar to some of the participants. The most common concerns with PAP were fear of having a bad result, and just kind of general nervousness. They hadn't done it in a long time, and some women were obviously concerned about the pain. Only one woman reported that her husband didn't want her to get a pap, and one woman, different woman, reported that her husband didn't want her to do cell collection because he's very jealous. So overall conclusions, we found that developing that personal relationship, that ongoing relationship, is really essential for recruitment and retention. It's kind of no surprise there. But that can take a lot of time and effort. This was a year of recruitment that we got 70 women finally with a half-time coordinator, so that's not insignificant. And we did find that once they had actually done the self-collection, Latina women were overall happy with the process, but it definitely did take a little bit of reassurance. So our implications in terms of addressing that staff time issue is really to integrate self-collection into existing programs that have good reach and trusting relationships. So there was a study working with Ventanillas de Salud in Texas, which is a service provided by the Mexican consulate to help reach out to Mexican citizens in the United States and get them access to healthcare. There have been several studies working with lay health workers. Aaron Kobitz's group in Miami is one example where they actually door-to-door offer self-collection and pick up the kits after the women have done their sample. And then there's a really interesting project that was completed in Argentina with community health workers who actually, it's a government program, and they did the same thing, door-to-door dissemination of these kits, and a really, really good effect on increasing uptake there. But again, this issue of access and navigation to care, in the Ventanillas de Salud study, only 50% of the HPV positives went to a follow-up PAP. The researchers did their due diligence in advance to make sure that women would be eligible for a program, but some women were nervous about their immigration status. They didn't want to contact a program, even though it wouldn't have been a problem. They were nervous about it. Some women weren't able to prove income because they had informal employment, and so they weren't able to get into the program. So even though they thought everyone would be able to, a lot of people didn't end up accessing it. Compared to the study in Argentina, where the women, the community health workers are part of an existing healthcare system, and so they could connect them directly in. And there are certainly implications for how we would want to distribute these in the U.S. as part of maybe an existing healthcare system. But of course, this problem of ensuring access to care is not unique to self-collection. This is really an issue with any population, making sure they can access that care. So I just want to thank all of our wonderful collaborators and partners, in particular Dr. Chris Munoz, who was very generous with her time to provide screening to all of our participants, or most of our participants, and she actually provided the follow-up care for those women who needed treatment at UNC. Thank you very much.